Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
Joining us today to blow the whistle on these hidden costs is one of the nation's leading drug pricing experts. He is the president of Three Axis Advisors, the CEO of the nonprofit 46 Brooklyn Research. He was named one of Business Insider's top leaders transforming healthcare. Antonio Chacha, welcome to The Source.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you need to go easy on me on this because I don't know anything. This is crazy. This is kind of like, this is something we just have to endure. That's kind of been the vibe. But so help me this, like, I go to the pharmacy counter. What am I dealing with? What's the biggest hidden cost that everyday consumers are paying without even realizing it?
Well, let's start by pretending as though your pharmacy is also a grocery store, right? So a lot of Americans, when they get their medicines, they go call in their refills, and then once they're done shopping, voila, the prescriptions are ready at the pharmacy. When you walk into that grocery store, every aisle is essentially the same, where you are looking around, seeing what you need, what you want, and then evaluating whether or not those purchases meet the constraints of your wallets or purses. And the benefit for us as consumers is we can look at all the different items in that grocery store. And even though there are publicly traded companies that are selling us those groceries and publicly traded companies that are shipping those items to those grocery stores, or even manufacturing facilities or farming facilities that are also part of for-profit companies, we can still see a reasonable price for most of the things that we buy. And there might be differences of pennies, nickels, and dimes from one item to the next or one grocery store to the next. But in general, because we have transparent, known prices that are intended to be bought as is, we as consumers have a tremendous amount of pressure that we put on grocery prices. However, once you're done buying all those groceries and you go over to the pharmacy counter, traditional rules of economics and supply and demand go right out the window because the prices are not transparent. They're not set in a competitive manner where they're meant to be afforded by our wallets and purses, but instead are intended to be subject to a negotiation because the prices are ridiculous and absurd. And so the question then becomes, well, if the prices are ridiculous for medicines, how do we achieve affordability? And that brings us to our convoluted prescription drug supply chain, where anything goes and the same drug could have hundreds, if not thousands, of prices from one pharmacy, one insurance plan to another.
We know that in other countries, the same drugs are being sold for a lot less. A lot of times when I cross the border into Mexico for covering a story or something, I'll see a lot of people from the United States driving hundreds of miles to go get their meds across the border in order to, you know, get them a lot cheaper. People go into Canada to get their drugs a lot cheaper. First of all, are those are the same drugs? Are the same quality of the drug I would get in my hometown here in the United States? And why are they cheaper there?
The answer is yes and no. And you're going to hear a lot of yes and no's because there's no black and white in this business. But in general, you will find that brand drugs, the innovator products that where the manufacturers have patent exclusivity, if you cross over U.S. border lines, or if you go across the globe, you will often find that those medicines are much more affordable to the consumer and the payer than they are in the United States. However, generic drugs tend to be much less expensive in the United States because there are much more rigorous forms of competition. The challenge for the consumer is that other countries have made a very proactive and arguably top-down decision to say to drug companies of all shapes and sizes, if you want to sell your drugs in our country, you're going to have to agree to our pricing terms. And so other countries besides the U.S. engage in price controls. And those price controls don't have their own shortcomings because oftentimes those countries will say, look, to Pfizer or Eli Lilly or pick your drug maker of choice, they'll say, if you want to sell your drugs here, you'll have to do so on our terms. Well, sometimes those drug companies say, well, we don't like those terms. And so we're not going to sell our drugs in your country, or we're going to delay access to those drugs in your country. That is a very real thing. But for many consumers where the medicines are already available, they walk up to the pharmacy counter in the United States and find drugs that could be hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. And if they're not covered by their insurance plan, they're in a serious, serious bind. So other countries take a more, we'll say a strong approach to access and affordability. Whereas in the United States, we have a relatively free market, or a free-for-all, depending on your perspective, where the prices are obscene and only attainable through a government program or through some sort of intermediary in the drug channel on behalf of an insurance company or a pharmacy benefit manager.
So if I don't have insurance, a lot of people in Texas don't have insurance and they need a drug and they get a prescription for it. What are they going to end up paying, and how does it differ than if you do have insurance?
Well, in the United States, there are very poor incentives for drug companies to compete by lowering the list prices. And so we're going to talk about the difference between price and cost. And it sounds like those are the same things, but they are not. As I said at the opening, you can look at the bread aisle and see that the loaf of bread is going to be $3.99, right? You know that that's the price. And when you grab the bread off the shelf and then you go up to the cash register, that $3.99 will magically appear. That's what you'll be charged. But for medicines, manufacturers have exemptions to federal anti-kickback laws. They also have, there are also laws in the books that require manufacturers to offer big discounts that lower the cost of the drug, but don't change the price. So think, hey, the price might be the sticker price like on a car, but then you're intended to actually negotiate or get some sort of discount. Well, in the US, you might have a generic drug. If you have a generic drug that you need, all of a sudden you have much more opportunities because there's far more competition. But unfortunately, competition, again, doesn't lower price. It only creates an opportunity for someone to negotiate a discount. And so in the US, most people with private insurance rely on what's known as a pharmacy benefit manager, or a PBM. The PBM works on behalf of your employer or a government program, determining which drugs will be covered under your benefit plan. Now, because drug companies have exemptions to federal anti-kickback laws, along with PBMs, that allows your drug company to provide big legalized kickbacks to PBMs in exchange for preferring certain drugs over others. So if you're sitting there saying, what the heck is this guy talking about? Think about the time you walked up to a pharmacy counter and they said your medicine is covered or it's not. That coverage decision is ultimately conducted by your PBM, that pharmacy benefit manager. And the decisions of what will be covered versus not will be largely dependent upon the financial interests of those PBMs. So if we were to walk through a metaphorical drug as an example, let's say Pfizer makes a very popular drug. They want to sell that drug into the market. Well, you and I are only going to be able to afford that medicine if we buy it through our insurance. Pfizer knows that, and so they have to come up with big, big rebates or legalized kickbacks back to the PBM in order to sway them or incentivize them to favor their drug over an alternative. Well, that sounds like a good thing, right? Well, the PBM is going to get this big discount. Well, the discount doesn't have to be shared. And so what happens is Pfizer will just raise its price, its sticker price, higher and higher to create more and more financial room for a discount or a legalized kickback to the PBM, which means the prices go up and the PBM gets to determine which drugs will be covered. So the PBM really is determining what reality will be, what access will be, and what affordability will be for us as patients.
So you talked about generic drugs. And a generic drug, I imagine, that's when the patent for that particular drug is no longer in effect. It's run out. But don't these drug companies, can't they do little tricks in order to extend those patents to keep these drugs from becoming generic?
Oh, absolutely. Drug companies are masters of the patent portfolio. So they can do a number of things like pay to delay. They can do things like patent extensions or reformulations, where they essentially take an old drug and say, hey, let's add one little insignificant component to the drug, and voila, we have a new drug. all of those things happen. So manufacturers do take great liberties with the allowances that we give them through patent law. But conceptually, I believe the model makes sense, meaning that we in the United States say to drug companies, look, we want you to have incentives to bring new innovative therapies to market. And in doing so, we're going to give you a patent that will give you exclusive access to the market. So if you bring something new that's hopefully great and helpful for consumers and patients, we will reward you handsomely so you continue to do so. So most people would agree that, at least conceptually, we want manufacturers to be incentivized to bring new drugs to market. The question is, what's the cost relative to the value of those products? Well, if you ask the manufacturers that are making them, they're going to say, this is the greatest drug ever. We should be able to charge billions and billions of dollars for it. Well, just because they want to set that price doesn't mean the market will yield that type of result. And so drug companies will do whatever they can to squeeze out as much financial gains that they can during a time when they have no competition. But to your point, once patent exclusivity runs out, that's when the generic drug companies come in. So think Big Pharma being the big drug companies, right?
Yeah, so we'll get into that. We got to hit this break. Our phone lines are open. Listeners, if you got a question or a comment, how are you doing paying for your prescription drugs? Have you ever had a lot of questions like why does the price vary so much? Why are you paying so much? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues with more, trying to figure out why we're paying so much for prescription drugs right after this.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. What is going on with the pricing of prescription drugs? You get your prescription from the doctor. He says you need this medication in order to get your blood pressure down or your heart going the right way. And you need this med, but you go get it at the counter and it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. How does that happen? And we know that some of these drugs are a lot cheaper in other parts of the world. And why can't these drugs be made available to us at an affordable price? Antonio Chacha is with us. He is an expert in this area. Antonio, how'd you get so smart on this?
Well, I was dumb. So I'm in Columbus, Ohio, and I came from a pharmacy family. And I eventually got into journalism after I said organic chemistry was too much for me to swallow in college. And so I got a job at the Ohio Pharmacists Association, where I started learning about pharmacy from the biased perspective of pharmacists. Pharmacists want to get paid more for what they do. But on the other end of the transaction are as a patient or an employer or government program that wants to pay less. Well, back in 2016, I had pharmacists complaining about underpayments within the Ohio Medicaid program. But on the other end of the transaction, where pharmacies were getting paid less, the state was paying more. So those two things didn't make sense. How could pharmacies be getting paid less for the same drug in the same transaction that the state is paying more for? We came across publicly available data showing the costs that Medicaid was paying in Ohio. What we saw was that there was a divergence. The costs of drugs were going down in reality, but the cost of the state for those same drugs were going up. Our work prompted a data investigation by our state auditor that ultimately uncovered that these pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs, that were working on behalf of the state Medicaid program were engaged in a practice called spread pricing, where they pay the pharmacy, let's say, $5, they bill the state $11, and they pocket the difference. That audit ultimately uncovered $245 million that these little known intermediaries were pulling out of the Medicaid program, which begged the question of, if everybody cares about how expensive drugs are, how is it that we're missing $245 million that are being taken below the line? And while pharmacies are getting run out of town and patients are being asked to pay more, the question should go right to the actual structure of our system, which is asking the question, is if we have to deal with bloated drug prices and have to rely on insurance companies and PBMs to rescue us from them, What happens when those insurance companies and PBMs become part of the very problem we hired them to control?
Is this due to public policy? Is this because of what's going on with Congress?
I would argue yes, but it's not as simple as you might think it is. I would argue that anyone who's listening to this would say, what if I told you I was going to give you a discount on your medicines? I think everybody would say, that sounds great. Yeah, I want a discount. Well, what happens if the discount becomes the enemy of affordability? Let me explain. So years ago, before we covered medicines under our state Medicaid programs, the government went to drug companies and said, look, Medicaid takes care of the poorest of the poor across the country. We know that you can't really sell your medicines to them because the patients can't afford them. So we, the government, are going to step in and we're going to cover all those drugs for the poorest of poor through Medicaid. So they created the Medicaid drug rebate program, which told drug companies that, look, if you sell your drugs to Medicaid, we are going to demand that you give us at least a 23% discount off the list price. Then we're going to require you to have a best price obligation, meaning that if you offer a discount to anybody else, you have to replicate that same discount to Medicaid programs. And so it sounded great, right? If drug companies get to essentially get all their medicines covered by Medicaid, in exchange, we get a discount from them. Sounds good, except the underlying premise is that the list prices are now a lie. The message to the drug companies was, you no longer have to set reasonable list prices because the real cost will be determined by the discount. So if you don't tell the drug companies that they can't raise their prices however they want, they can just raise the price higher and higher to create more and more room for discount. Well, the end result of that is an addiction problem to discounts. They created the 340B program, which extended those discounts to hospitals. They created discounts for the Medicare program, the Department of Veterans Affairs. And before you know it, the entire system became consumed by discounting. And so manufacturers and pharmacies have no incentives to compete by lowering the list prices, but they have to charge them. And so the drug companies set sky-high list prices. Pharmacies set sky-high list prices, which means we need a negotiator or a PBM, somebody living in the middle, to say that price is too high. Here's what I'm going to negotiate. That means that we need the PBM. The PBM is structurally there to make the problem better or make the problem go away. But when the PBM becomes another hand in the cookie jar, when they too are a publicly traded company, you fast forward the tape till to now, where the three largest PBMs are Fortune 15 companies. They're larger than the drug companies and pharmacy companies they were hired to control. That's United Healthcare, Cigna, and Aetna, CVS Health, Optum, Express Scripts. These are the largest companies in the world that most people don't even know who they are, but control everything when it comes to the affordability and access of medicines.
We're seeing independent pharmacies, rural pharmacies being crushed by these pricing structures. Is there a way to deal with that, to help these local pharmacies? And having a local pharmacy can be very beneficial to a community.
It's critical for many communities, right? It's not just a question of, hey, do I have enough access? Some communities, some counties don't even have a single pharmacy within reach. In a system where the biggest discounts are supplied to the biggest, most leveraged negotiators, it would make sense that the smallest independent pharmacies, i.e. those with the least amount of leverage, would be the ones who are most readily bulldozed in the current environment. We have data to back that up. We did a study in the state of Washington not too long ago where we got data from independent and small chain pharmacies across the state of Washington. And then we also got data from employers across the state of Washington. And we did a compare and contrast to see what did pharmacies get paid versus what did employers get charged. And when we were done with that analysis, what you could find was that independent pharmacies oftentimes receive the lowest payments possible on a prescription relative to some of their other peers. In fact, the one category of pharmacies that we saw the most financially healthy are pharmacies that are owned by the PBMs. So what we found was that the average independent pharmacy might yield about $14 in margin per prescription in the state of Washington. However, when those same employers that were paying the independent pharmacies a $14 markup, when you looked at their data, when those prescriptions were being filled at pharmacies that were owned by the PBMs that were setting the prices, those charges were $47 per claim. So the average difference between a non-owned independent pharmacy by a non-PBM-owned pharmacy, they got paid a third lower than what PBMs paid the pharmacies that they owned. So think of it this way. The PBM will tell you which drugs are covered under your benefit plan versus which ones aren't. Then they'll tell you which pharmacies you can go to get your drugs covered versus which ones you can't. That same PBM that's determining which drugs will be bought under the plan and which pharmacies you can go to can get kickbacks from the drug company to get you to get that medicine made by the drug company. And then they can force you or steer you to go to the pharmacy that they own, where they then get to set the price. And when they do so, they pay themselves more than what they pay the competitor pharmacies.
So we're getting taken to the cleaners on these necessary life-saving pharmaceuticals. So I know you're working with Mark Cuban. What can you tell me briefly, what is he trying to do that's going to change this?
So I think it's easy for people to point fingers. And I think if you're listening to this, you're probably sitting there saying, well, the drug companies are bad, the pharmacies are bad, the PBMs are bad. And you would be right about everything. It is a system problem. And for-profit companies are going to do what for-profit companies do, which is make money for shareholders. And so this entire system that I outlined, where pharmacies buy inflated price drugs from wholesalers who have inflated prices, and then the pharmacies themselves set their own inflated prices, and they set them inflated because the government's policy is bad and because the PBMs love high prices. What Mark Cuban has done is said, this is dumb. We're not going to do it this way. We're going to go back to the way things were in the 70s and in the 60s, where pharmacy doesn't operate like it does today, but instead operates like that grocery store that you know and love today, where the prices aren't being set as a starting point for a negotiation, but instead the prices are real. And so what Mark Cuban does is says, I'm not going to let the insurance companies and the PBMs dictate how I'm going to price my medicines. I'm going to unplug from that system completely and essentially make what old is new. When I buy a drug, if I'm Mark Cuban, I say, okay, if I bought it for $5, I'm going to set a 15% markup on top of it for Mark Cuban cost plus drug company, and then set a shipping fee and a dispensing fee, and then call it a day. So rather than relying on big inflated prices and big discounts, where you can have hundreds of different experiences depending on who's buying the drug, Mark Cuban says, here's my one price, and it's based upon a set objective cost. And when he does that, we find that Cuban will save 37% on all generic drugs that he offers relative to what PBMs are charging patients and plan sponsors in a more insurance-focused pharmacy supply chain.
All right. I hope that disrupts the entire industry and forces a massive corruption. Antonio Chacha, thank you so much. He's the CEO of the nonprofit 46 Brooklyn Research. He is the truth teller when it comes to drug pricing. Thank you so much. I caught some of what you were telling me. It's very complicated, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. It is complicated, and that's why the profits are so big, because the more complicated it is, the harder it is to fix.
All right. Have a good day. Appreciate it. That's The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.